show is on in less than 1 minute.
Life, you hear me? Give my creation life.
So this was fun.
You're going to like this.
Let go!
Right now!
Well, this is it.
Let's get this over with.
So this is good. We got progress.
Any questions before we proceed?
Good countdown. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
You have entered the restricted broadcast area. You have entered the restricted broadcast area.
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country.
I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Well, hello there. How you doing today? Another great day in store here at the Guy James Show. Still feeling the absolute euphoria from a week ago today's election. Yes, indeed. Are you? Of course, we're starting to get things settled out now, starting to find out who's in charge of what and what committees and all that. A very interesting process going on. Also very interesting to see what's going on inside the political minds of the neocons, the Republicans. Seems to me they're imploding. What do you think? Hey, we're so glad to have you along with us today, coming to you from the blue waters and sandy beaches of beautiful Southwest Florida, Fort Myers, Naples area. And of course, we're talking to folks all across the country and all around the world. We want to say a special hello to our friends listening in Finland right now. Just got an email from them there. So thank you for listening. I'm always glad to have you and our friends in Korea. Boy, some of you folks keep some odd hours, I must say. And a good deal of the folks that listen overseas do so on the podcast and the archives. So we're always glad to have all of you along, coming from other cultures, other nations, a lot of expats around the world. Just interesting to hear from all of you, and I do enjoy that, and I hope you'll keep letting us join you and keep sending those emails. I enjoy getting them from you, finding out what's going on in other countries. It's always interesting to know what is happening in other countries, and most especially the attitudes of other countries, people in other countries towards the United States. And I seem to have detected quite a change here in the past week from people of other countries sending emails congratulating us, other nations, other governments congratulating us on, well, like the old Wizard of Oz program. You know, I can't think of the name of the song exactly, but something or other to do with the witch being dead. And that's exactly what we've got, right? Ding dong, the witch is dead or something like that. And I kind of feel that way, and I still feel that way a week after the election. I'm still feeling really good over it, and I know most of you are as well. And it is interesting to see the internecine warfare taking place right now inside the Republican Party. They're really going at it. Who's going to end up with control of that? Interesting development there. I didn't think they would have such a wide open war, but they most certainly are. And we'll talk about that a little later on in the program. Many things to talk about today. We're going to touch on Joe Lieberman. We've got a good guest coming up at the bottom of this hour, a lady by the name of Dorothy Fall, that's written a tremendous book in regards to the, how Iran, the Iraq War, Bush's Iraq War, and the Vietnam War stack up against one another. Very interesting comparison between the two. Very close parallels in many, many different ways. We'd love to have you join us today on the program. As always, it is a talk show, and I expect you will do some of the talking. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. You'll have to excuse me this week. Feeling a little crazy. Ah, yes. All you college football fans, this is the big week. This is the Ohio State-Michigan week, and I know we've got lots of listeners in Ohio that are big Buckeye fans, the number one team in the nation, by the way. And, of course, we've got some friends up in that place up north of Ohio there. I can't think of the name of the state, but they wear yellow and blue as their colors. Some like to say maize and blue. I like to say yellow and blue. A great rivalry. And it's going to be interesting. So all you football fans, the big one's coming up on Saturday. And I know there's a lot of you that think, what the hell is he doing talking about football? We hate football. So I know there's some of you there like that. Hello to everybody on the chat room. And kind of a light crowd there right now. But hello to all you folks. And I see they, well, the fight song has been appreciated. Let's just say that. Okay. We've got our Buckeyes logged in. Good to know that. Where should we start today? Did I give you the phone number? Yes, I did. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I think the most interesting development that I've seen in a long time in the media, in the liberal media. Oh my God. You know, I've tried to put myself in Junior Bush's place these past few days, the past couple of days, ever since, when was it, Saturday I first saw that Newsweek cover. I just can't get myself in his place. I can't imagine. You mean, imagine this now. You're the president of the United States. You think you're the most powerful man on the face of the earth. You've learned otherwise since last Tuesday. But you, up until last Tuesday, you thought you were the most powerful man on earth. And you have that Newsweek cover thrown in your face. Has everybody seen that Newsweek cover with a giant-sized Herbert Walker Bush, Bush 41, and little teeny-weeny George Bush number 43 right beside him? And it says, Father knows best. Can you imagine the humiliation Junior Bush must feel over that? Probably a mixture of humiliation and rage and I don't know what all. First of all, he had most of his toys taken away from him last Tuesday. And as president, he's now as impotent as a newly castrated steer. He can no longer snap his fingers and get whatever he wants from Congress. He's actually going to have to work with them a little bit, and he doesn't know how to do that. He's going to have to learn that. He will actually have to compromise with them. And he's had his own way his entire life, and now he's going to have to play nice with others, and he's not used to that. The thing is, will he be able to do it? I think he'll have to, but I'm not thinking he's going to be too good at it, really. But getting back to this total humiliation, not only was he personally, totally repudiated by the American voting public, now he's having his face rubbed in it. Father knows best. After ignoring everything his daddy's people tried to tell him for the last 6 years, now he has to suck it up and ask for daddy's help. He's had nothing but scorn and contempt for his father's doings in Gulf War I, and now he's having to admit that daddy was probably right not to go into Baghdad. He's having to publicly say his idiotic stay the course nonsense is wrong. We've got James Baker and Robert Gates. We've got Rumsfeld fired. Cheney probably relegated to the back seat for the first time in this administration. Bush's flunkies Hastert and Frist are relegated to persona non grata status, that's for sure. I think it's evident right now he's the lamest of lame ducks that I can ever remember. I can't ever remember of a duck more lame than this guy right now. Not only that, but he knows his people, the people of this country, just hate his ass. They really do. 31% approval rating? 31%? Hell, Herbert Hoover could do that well. Warren Harding, too. Larry, Curly, and Moe had more respect than this guy's got. But that picture on Newsweek has to be the biggest slap in the face any American politician has ever received, ever, that I can remember in my lifetime. To me, that's a whole hell of a lot more embarrassing than, even than Clinton getting caught. I mean, I would be more embarrassed by this, I would. Especially knowing the rivalry between Junior Bush and his daddy. You know, insiders always say that daddy's always thought Jeb would be the one to take the high office. Jeb was the fair-haired boy in the family, while Junior was nothing but a drunken frat boy. Jeb was the smart one, while Junior had to use his daddy's name to even get into school. And now the whole world knows that daddy was right all along. Junior Bush is, in fact, Bush the Lesser. Junior is the foolish one with not an ounce of common sense or intellect. Junior takes office and treats everybody associated with his daddy like dirt, and now Junior has to grovel at his daddy's feet and beg for help to straighten out his worst mess yet. Oh, sure. All the drinking, the cocaine, the screwed up oil ventures, one after another, after another, after another. All of that was bad enough, but this, a failed war, a failed foreign policy. Let's face it, it's a total failed presidency from top to bottom. This is a disaster. This is the worst doo-doo Junior's ever stepped in. So now he has to go and beg his daddy to help save his legacy. Maybe I shouldn't use the word legacy. Junior Bush's legacy would be that of a bumbling oaf who couldn't find his ass with both hands. He's going to go down in history as the worst, most incompetent president we've ever had. But I just can't imagine being him right now and having to ask his daddy for help after all of his sanctimonious crap that he spewed, you know, that's come out of Junior's mouth. Now he has to get down on his knees and say, "Daddy, please save me again." God, how embarrassing. How very embarrassing. Oh, my, oh, my. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. I do hope you'll give us a call today. We'd love to hear from you. We'll be back in just a minute.
I love you, but those jeans have got
to
go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Oh, yeah, power to the people. Power's back where it ought to be, with the people. That is, if our Democratic electees do what they're supposed to do and do what we elected them to do. We're counting on them. We're really counting on them. If they want to make the Democratic Party great again, as great as it's ever been, they have a great opportunity to do that right now. Great opening in the door right now to walk right in, take control, and do things the way they ought to be done. God knows they know what the people want. Now it's up to our legislators, our Democratic legislators, to do what it is needs to be done in the best interest of the country instead of the best interest of the fat cats that we've been having for the last 6 years. So if the Democrats really want to make hay off of this, forget the politics of it, forget Democrat, Republican, do what's right. And if they do, we'll really take the House and Senate the next time, and the White House too. Hey, let's go to the phone. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
This is Alice from Humboldt County.
Hi, Alice. How are you?
Okay. Guy, most of us still believe that the Republicans cheated again. Many of us believe probably we won 40 or 50 more seats. We even think they meant to hang on to both houses.
Well, they may well have, but they didn't.
Congress.
They didn't, and I guess you know, the investigations and so forth into that will continue to go on, and folks like Brad Freeman and Friedman and Clint Curtis and all those folks will continue to try and find the answers to that for us. The only really bad incident that I know of so far is Christine Jennings down here in Florida, where we've got the around 18,000 missing votes, and she only got beat by 300 and some, so... that one's up in the air right now, but yeah, and then there was other spot problems around the country, but not as bad as I thought it would be.
Well, I'm grateful, I tell you. We still need to get rid of these voting machines, Guy.
I would say so. I'd love to get rid of them. I really would.
Yeah.
I think most people would.
Caused a lot of trouble.
They have indeed, and it just, you know, the worst thing about it takes away your confidence.
I know it.
You're standing there, you're voting, and you're wondering, gee whiz, I wonder if this is legitimate, if it's on the up and up. And yeah. I hate to think that, you know.
I do too.
But I'm.
Wanted to be honest.
Yeah, that's what we're all looking for. But I hope maybe by next time around, why maybe we can get rid of some of these. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with a few of these. You know, who knows? The Republicans will probably start screaming now that they got gypped.
Well, anyway, I'm thinking of you, Guy.
Well, thank you, Alice.
I'm right behind you and all these things you're doing.
Thanks very much. It's good to hear from you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, bye-bye.
866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. How about this Lieberman deal? First of all, let me give you something I found here, just happened across. What do you think the odds are that Joe Lieberman's last two opponents have gotten, get this, exactly 448,077 votes in this election and his last reelection? 448,077 votes both times. What do you think the odds are of that happening? And as you well know, if you've listened to the show for a long time, you will also know that quite some time ago I predicted that Joe Lieberman would get elected and then join the Republican Party. And I hope I'm wrong on that. I really hope I'm wrong on that. But I don't know. Signs are starting to point that way to me. He's... starting to get real wishy-washy on whether or not he will or not. Says it depends on what was it, on how he's treated and all that. You guys better be really nice to me. Boy, what a whiner he is. And it just depends if I'm comfortable or not, whether or not I caucus with the Democrats, you know. Oh, Joe. Hey, back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hey, how you doing, Guy?
Good.
Hey, it's Patrick down in St. Petersburg. I've been listening to your comments about getting Daddy, giving Sonny advice. You know, if Sonny Boy finishes his last couple years out, it'll be 28 years, and 20 of the last 28 years we had a Republican in there, right?
Yeah.
But of the 20 years, figure this one out. It's been a Bush in there under either being the vice president or the president.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and then what really bothers me is, what's Daddy going to do for Sonny? If you go back to the Bay of Pigs, Daddy played a big part of that, had that screwed up. Then he becomes vice president, gets involved with Iran-Contra, and then he becomes the president and goes in and tries to take out Saddam, and he fails. I mean, the whole family is a bunch of failures.
Yeah.
A bunch of them are a bunch of failures, period.
I agree. They've always got their nose right in it, too, don't they?
Hey, and you know what's really crazy? When the old man went into the Bay of Pigs, he had his terrorist friends, Luis Posada, Orlando Bosch, and Felix Rodriguez, you know? They go into Iran with the Iran-Contra. He's got Felix Rodriguez and Luis Posada involved in that. The United States in one hangar has got arms. Felix Rodriguez in the other hangar has got drugs. Now you're going to deal with him again because Bosch and Rodriguez live in Miami. And God almighty, here's Luis Posada getting ready to get out of a Texas jail and go to Miami to be with him. Small world, isn't it?
Yeah, well, their circle is a small world.
And every time a terrorist name pops up, a Bush name pops up with them.
Yeah, seems to.
Boy. And then we heard the good news today down in Florida that Mel Martinez is going to be the fundraiser. All he's got to do is get in his car and ride to Miami and get all his terrorist friends down there.
That's right.
He don't got far to go. He don't have to travel around the world.
That's for sure.
Thanks for your time, man. It's God almighty.
Yeah, I was really surprised at that. And I guess they're going to go after the Cuban vote. That's
yeah,
what they're after
the
there.
Problem. We really do. This guy, honest to God, guy, this guy, this guy, Posada, the Judge Martinez gave him to February 1st to either, call him a terrorist or he's going to release him. And he's already said as soon as he gets out of jail, he's going to Miami to be to his friends and family. And now we got the new Charlie boy down here, Chris. I bet he does nothing at all to try to stop him from coming to Miami, to Florida.
No, they won't. You're exactly right.
Really scary, man.
Yeah, it is. Hey, thanks for your call.
Hey, thank you,
man. Good to hear from you. Yeah, it seems like trouble seems to follow these people around. It seems like they're looking for it all the time. It does seem like George Herbert Walker Bush has always had his nose in where there's been conflict. And odd how some of the same arms dealers and, some of his same henchmen are always hanging around. They're always hovering over wherever there's trouble in the world. And God knows the Bush family has certainly been in on plenty of it. That's for sure. Speaking of terrorists, what do you think? Is this guy, I can't think of his name right now. I'll find it here. Castigan or guess whatever it is. This guy they caught sending the powder to two people. Where did I have that? I got his name around here someplace. Well, yeah, here we go. California suspect in threats. What is his name? Chad Conrad Castagana, 39 years old, a freeper. Well. The guy is an avid freeper. What do you think? Will they declare him a domestic terrorist? Huh? Will they? And then will they hold him indefinitely? He fits all the categories of a domestic terrorist that I can see. Wouldn't it be funny if one of the first people to get bit in the ass by Bush's new tactics would be a freeper? That would be some kind of karma, wouldn't it? Let's go back to the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
Hi, this is Juanita.
Hi, Juanita.
I wanted to reiterate my prediction. I've predicted a couple of times on there in the past 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you remember or not, but isn't it about time for Jed to become vice president?
Well, that could well happen.
Do you remember I predicted?
Yeah, Yeah, Mr. Cheney might just have some health problems and have to resign. And
yeah, and Jeb is out of a job. And see, all the reporting and all the liberal news, they say he's our beloved governor down here. He's so beloved in Florida.
Boy, they do, don't they? Don't they just fawn over him?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Yeah, just the very popular governor, and well, let's face it, he did get reelected quite easily. But I wonder how. Yeah, I always wonder why he's so popular.
I don't know that he is. I mean, is he?
Well, I've been easily reelected twice.
Well,
I'd have to say the last time he had a pretty doggone weak opponent. Bill McBride's a nice guy and all that, but I see his.
Well, I think there was some hanky panky there too.
Well, there might be, but
because he had it all wrapped up, and before all the returns, you know, he's so far ahead.
Well, that may be true, but I also attribute some of that to we Democrats didn't put up a very good candidate the last time.
Well, they didn't want Janet Reno, you know.
No, and they nosed out Bill McBride, or got Bill McBride out there, and
yeah,
I see his wife got more votes for state controller.
She ran.
Yeah, her name's Alex Sink.
Is that his line?
Yeah, she got more votes than he for that office than he did for governor last time around. So,
well, you know, I don't know if you saw their last debate. You know, Kent Russert.
Yeah.
And he just really wiped the floor with McBride.
Yes, he sure did. It wasn't fair at all.
No, and you know. But anyway, I also want to say about Joe Lieberman.
Mm-hmm.
I think he thinks he's got it made in the shade, don't you?
I think you're right. I think he's standing there in the middle, and he can throw this thing either way he wants to, and he knows it.
And the thing is that these Republicans are, you know, these Democrats we have, some of them are going to be, oh, don't go, Joe, don't go. You know, I think they ought to have let him. Go, hey.
Yeah, you better believe there's some real...
If we lose the Senate, we lose the Senate.
There's some real dealing going on right now, you can bet.
Yeah, he's something else.
He's got a good hand, and he knows it.
And, you know, him and McCain, they both are something else. I don't know. They're just...
I know what you mean.
I tell you, it's just unbelievable.
It is, in fact.
Yeah, okay.
Hey, nice to hear from you, Juanita.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Well, we're going to, let's see, we're coming up on the bottom of the hour here right now. We sure are. Let's just pause for a break. When we come back, we'll have our guest with us.
In the West, the old cowboys put their trust in a creed. They had faith in the law and the worth of a deed. But above all the rest, it was truth that came first. In the sins of the cowboy, a lie was the worst. Now old Davy Crockett had a motto, it said, be sure you are right, and then go ahead. But a rich boy from Texas has forgotten his roots, and the pride of his homeland is dead. All had and no cattle, but no master plan, and the need to do battle to avenge your old man. Cisco and Pancho, Roy would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Yes, we knew the Lone Ranger didn't need any fame. When they wanted to thank him, they just got his name. He needed no credit or praise for his time, but he'd do the right thing just the same. All had and no cattle with no master plan, and the need to do battle to avenge your old man. Wild Bill and Wyatt and Gene would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. If it's half gun, we'll travel that our nation believes. We need truth from a wise man who would not deceive. When Paladin reached for his Colt 45, he was certain the truth would survive. All had and no cattle with no master plan, and the need to do battle with your head in the sand. Hop along, Cassidy, sure would be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad. Yes, all those old cowboys would surely be sad to see this cowboy from Texas gone bad.
Welcome back, everybody. Glad to have you along with us here on the Guy James Show this afternoon. Beautiful day here in Southwest Florida. I hope it's nice where you're at as well. Some people starting to get a little snow and a little bit of raw weather, but it's the most beautiful time of the year here. The fall in Southwest Florida is just gorgeous. About 82, 83 degrees every day, and the humidity is gone. It's just gorgeous, but I don't want to make you feel bad. Hey, thanks for being with us here in the program today. And as promised, we now have Dorothy Fall on the line. Dorothy, are you with us?
I sure am, in beautiful Washington, D.C.
Well, I love Washington. I do, I do. I've always said, my wife and I have been there many, many, many times, and I've got a relative that had a high office in the Clinton administration, and you know, we'd go visit her and so forth. But I'd love to come and live in Washington for just a couple of years. I'm not a big...
Oh, it's a lovely place, and there's so much going on here, too.
Oh, always. enough to keep you going constantly, and I'd love to do that for a couple of years. I really would.
Well, you should try it.
Well, I would. I'd like to get one of those nice little townhouses there close to the White House, you know, right across from MacArthur Park, or is it MacArthur Park?
Jackson Square.
Yeah, just one of those right there. You know, they're probably right. Probably a bit more expensive than I am.
Everything's expensive here.
Yeah, it sure is. Well, welcome to the Guy James Show. We're glad to have
you
along with us today. And the reason we had you on today is that, of course, we have talked for a long time on this program about the parallels between the Iraq War and the Vietnam War, and there certainly are many similarities. And you have now written a book called Bernard Fall, Memories of a Soldier Scholar, and it's by Potomac Books. Did it just come out this month?
It came out in October.
October.
Yes.
And, well, I'll let you explain. A lot of folks know who Bernard Fall was, but how did you happen to take up the mantle here and write this book? I mean, he wrote several books.
I did it because he had such a fascinating life. He died in 1967, and shortly after his death, I decided that I really had to write about his life. It was one of destiny, and it was one of courage and bravery in looking for the truth and revealing it at whatever the cost. And that was how he died, was in Vietnam, doing his research, traveling with the Marines. And his life was so fascinating because it involved all of the important events of mid-20th century. His family was involved in the Holocaust, and they fled to France, and his mother was deported to Auschwitz, and his father was killed by the Gestapo.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes. Well, there are all kinds of things in this book that are revealed for the first time. And at 16, Bernard joined the French Resistance. And it was there that he learned about counterinsurgency. He became a guerrilla warrior, And this gave him the background to understand a lot of the conflict in Vietnam. And that was why I called it Soldier Scholar, because he always remained a soldier in that respect. And he was a scholar because so much of his work is so scholarly. And he wrote books on, he wrote a very famous book called Street Without Joy, which he had written about his experiences in 1953 when he, on his first trip to Vietnam when the French were fighting there. And so,
And we should mention that besides just being an author and you mentioned as a soldier and so forth, but he lectured at U.S. military institutions. He taught I'm wanting to say Howard University.
He taught at Howard University, yeah.
And
he had an impact on his students.
And wrote for the New York Times, the New Republic, Esquire, Saturday Evening Post. So this wasn't just any ordinary journalist here.
No, it wasn't.
No,
it wasn't.
Certainly
but
not.
He became very controversial. The government didn't like what he was writing. The FBI went after him. And I have a whole chapter on surveillance. They were tapping our phone and going through our mail, and they were trying to intimidate him. And they spoke to these generals who were heads of these military establishments, the Army War College, Fort Bragg, where the Green Berets were, the Special Forces School. And the general there, General Yarborough, refused to not have him come. He said Bernard Fall gave us the best information on the North Vietnamese of anyone who came, and it's very important that we continue using his services. So finally, the FBI gave up in 1965. They realized that Bernard had such a backing that it would have been embarrassing for them to continue. They tried to prove he was a French agent.
Well, let me ask you, at that time, when this surveillance was taking place and so forth, were you fully aware of it at that time?
It's interesting that you should ask that question, because Bernard assumed he was. He would hear clicks on the telephone. In fact, at one point, the phone went dead. He was speaking in French to a friend who had just come to visit the U.S., and then it went back on, and he said to the fellow, well, that must be the FBI getting an interpreter. And it's in the file. I have Bernard's file. And they said, oh, he must be suspicious, but we're sure that he doesn't realize this is going on.
How did you get the file?
Well, I asked for it in the late when was it? The late 70s, early 82. I could see that the country was becoming more conservative and I would have more trouble getting it. It was all blacked out. And I appealed it. I could not get anything. I couldn't read anything in it. And then later in 1995, when President Clinton issued this directive that the FBI release more materials, I asked for it again. And it took 5 years. But I did get it, and I could read most of it. Of course, the sources were redacted, and there were a lot of things that, you know, they did not want anyone to see. But there was enough revealed so that, I mean, they were very open in talking about or in writing about tapping our phone, trying to put a microphone in our house. I mean, this is for someone,
wow.
All he did was to tell the truth.
That would be some interesting, bizarre reading to get your own file and
right.
Read things like this.
Well, I was angry that my tax money would go for something so ridiculous.
Yes, and I think we should explain, now from what I can understand of Bernard, he wasn't all that political, was he?
He was not political at all.
No.
Because he was not a citizen, and he realized that he could not be involved in anything political, but he said that these were his scholarly analyses. He was a military analyst.
Well, it's interesting that he's not political in as much as that he can write and be completely neutral and give honest, open opinions and not have anybody accuse him of being political. So when you're reading this, you know you're reading truth.
That's the point. I almost called my book Living for Truth, because essentially that's what he did.
Well, there are just so few people in that position that are not, you know, haven't really chosen sides heavily politically, and they're just so rare that you run across somebody like that.
Right. Well, I have been. I actually saw General Giap, who was the general who defeated both the French and, let's say, the Americans, or who stymied us.
Yes.
And he said, we were always grateful for those authors, like your husband, who wrote so non-objectively.
Yes.
And he named several others. One was a French friend of ours who wrote a book on Indochina. But he was very even-handed. And he wrote what he found, and he insisted on doing his research firsthand. In other words, that's why he kept going to Vietnam. My book is really about two love affairs, his love affair with Vietnam and with his family. And it's a very personal book. It's a memoir, and yet it includes the history and Bernard's work. So it's multi-layered. And I think it works because I've been getting wonderful letters from people and marvelous reactions from people who've read it.
That's good to hear. Let's get into some of the similarities and differences between Vietnam and Iraq. We've talked about that sometimes at length on this program, but your insight and his insight into it, of course, is valuable to the readers and to folks on our program.
Sure. Well, I'll be glad to tell you, because I know more about Vietnam, but we can read about Iraq in the paper. In Vietnam, the government officials were making policy for a country they knew nothing about. Robert McNamara wrote that in his book, and that's why I picked up my book after having had it sit for 22 years, and I started it again when Robert McNamara came out with his book, in which he said, there were no experts. This country had no idea about the Vietnamese, you know, its history, its people, or their persistence and their capabilities in fighting for their independence. He warned us, Bernard warned us, that this was an unwinnable war, and the government refused to heed his warnings. In the case of Iraq, it was the same thing. We had no idea. We didn't have any plan. We didn't know about the people. We didn't know about the country. And we were again in a quagmire.
If Donald Rumsfeld were to be honest someday and sit down and write a book, he would be writing the same thing that Robert McNamara wrote.
Right. And we have to remember that Robert McNamara left his position in 1967, and yet we were in the war for another 8 years.
Yes.
And I hope that doesn't hold true with Donald Rumsfeld.
That's
that we
right.
will be in there for 8 more years. But, in both cases, our reasons for going into the war were fabricated. We went into Vietnam because of the so-called domino theory, and we felt that if Vietnam fell, that the rest of Southeast Asia would become communist, and then eventually all of Asia. And in this case, in Iraq, we were told that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and that he was behind 9/11. So we unilaterally invaded that country. So it's really, really very bad. In Vietnam, John Kennedy told de Gaulle that we were going into Vietnam to spread democracy. I must admit that President de Gaulle told him not to go in. And that's what President Bush said about us in Iraq, that we went in to spread democracy in in Iraq.
Wonder why it is the second time around countries never want to listen. You know, we're having that experience in Afghanistan now after the Russians. We're having that experience in Iraq now after the British and French both earlier in the last century had horrible times. And here we are again, failing to learn from history.
Absolutely. My book is a warning about what happens when a government ignores the information that's available and they go blindly into a conflict that they know nothing about. So that was one of the reasons that I wrote this as well. And, you know, and then we have to look at the media, that the media has been, they've been pretty passive, I think, and
except when they started the war. Remember, right. You remember how they got the graphics and the music and everything all ready for this shock and awe. They just couldn't seemingly wait until it got started. And since then, I think they've fallen down on the job terribly.
Yeah, I think so too. And in Vietnam too, at the beginning, they gave President Johnson the benefit of the doubt. In my book, I write that in 1964, the Washington Post suddenly refused to publish Brunard's articles. They were filled with facts about the Vietnam War.
Really?
Yeah.
Was that ever made public?
Well, it is now in my
book. Yeah, I'd never heard that before.
Well, you'll be interested because the managing editor told me in 1982, as I sat next to him at lunch, Alfred Friendly, he turned to me and he said, "I always regretted that I refused to publish your husband's articles." And Brunard had been very upset because, you know, this was our hometown newspaper. And
did he give you an explanation for why he had to quit publishing your husband's articles?
I think it was pretty apparent that Brunard was his works were very controversial. They were counter to what the government was saying. And at that point, the Post was very supportive of the Johnson administration.
Yes.
They changed, as you remember, when they got the Vietnam papers.
Well, the press always seems to go with which way the wind is blowing. And when it started blowing an ill wind against Vietnam, they changed. And the same thing is happening right now.
Yeah.
The more you tell us here, the more striking the similarities are between
the two. It's really shocking.
You could just erase some names and write this and fill in other names and write the same story.
Well, it is just outrageous that this would happen, you know. And it's the same thing where people who speak out against the war are called traitors, and they go after them. And these, these men are dying. It looks like it's smaller numbers, but we haven't been in this war that long.
No, but
so and the injuries are so horrific.
Yeah, that's the thing. A lot of people. I heard one of the administration people talk the other day about, well, compared to the other wars, you know, our losses here are minimal. Perhaps that's true, but the medical care is better now, and they're saving more people that would have died. And you're right. The people are coming home with horrific injuries that they probably would not have come home.
Exactly.
In the last war, so
exactly. There are doctors. There's a doctor I know who wrote a book called Wounded, in which he describes exactly that.
Oh, yeah.
It's just really shocking. So we're seeing the same thing all over again. Now, how are we going to get out? The difference is that in Vietnam we knew who the enemy was. You know, we had the National Liberation Front, which was the Viet Cong, and they were organized.
And there was a government there, too, a working government.
Well, that was in the north, right?
Yes.
Right. And so, and Brunard had recommended, you know, this was in 1962, that we press for some kind of truce settlement. In 1962, that would definitely not be a surrender. So how we do that now, who would we do it with?
Well, we're fighting a ghost, a shadow.
And that's the same in Vietnam, because in Vietnam, the enemy was dressed like everybody else, and he would fade into just into the population. And, of course, we went out destroying their villages and moving the people to strategic hamlets in an effort to prevent the VC from having a haven. It didn't work, and here we're destroying, you know, cities and killing people, too. And so in both cases, we look like the enemy. I think this country has to think very carefully before it decides it's going to participate in a war or invade a country.
Well, no one would know better than you. Would Bernard be shocked that we got into another war under the almost exact same circumstances, or would he be resigned to the fact that that's how stupid humanity is at times?
I can't speak for him. I know he would have been terribly opposed. He also would have had, he would have had his facts. He would have analyzed everything, and he would have been shocked, I'm sure.
Yes. Well, tell me, are you going to go out and do a book tour? Are you?
Well, as a matter of fact, I'm coming to Miami.
Are you?
Coral Gables on December 1st. I'm going to be speaking at Books and Books.
Oh, wonderful. Wonderful.
So maybe some of your listeners will come to see me.
Yes. Hey, if you think of it, please send an email to guyjames@thegyjamesshow.com, and we'll promote that over there.
Wonderful. I'm writing that down right now.
All right. Folks, this is going to be fascinating because, as you all know, we've talked so many times about the parallels and similarities between these two wars, and all of a sudden, I didn't know anything about this until a friend of Dorothy's and mine, a mutual friend, let me know about this a couple of weeks ago, and I just find it remarkable. I don't think I'd ever seen it put down so succinctly, so that everybody can just see it right there. The comparison is really amazing between the two.
I'm very, very pleased that it is so. And I'll be traveling to California and to New York in March. And we're going to extend this into the year 2007, which is the 40th anniversary of Bernard's death.
Yes.
You know, he was only 40 years old when he died.
Wow. No, I didn't know he was 40.
He had produced hundreds of articles and 7 books. And
well, he accomplished a great deal in a very short life.
Yes, and this is a memoir. It's a very personal story, and I hope your listeners will read it.
Yes, it's available through Potomac. Is it available like on Amazon?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Bernard Fall, Memories of a Soldier Scholar. Sure, you can get it on Amazon easily.
Great, great.
And bookstores, too.
Sure. Well, Dorothy, thanks so much for being with us today. I've enjoyed the story, and our listeners have as well. And we'll keep in touch to find out how your book tour is going, and much success to you on this.
Great. Thank you so much, Guy. I've really enjoyed this.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, we've been saying it, and here it is put down in black and white for you, the parallels are absolutely striking between Vietnam and Iraq. We had two bullheaded governments, either too ignorant or too interested in profit-making for weapons manufacturers or whatever. The parallels are amazing on this, and I think you will enjoy this book. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. How many of you are familiar with Garrison Keillor? Garrison Keillor is a lifetime lefty, and he does the program Prairie Home Companion, does up from Minneapolis, St. Paul, Minnesota, and Lake Wobegon and all that. I didn't see the movie that was out recently that he was in. I think I'll read it. It comes out on disc and get it then. But he said this last week, and I do so admire his writing. They had his columns in our local paper here for 2 weeks, until the complaint grew too loud for the paper to stand, because it's a right-wing newspaper in a right-wing area here. It says, Garrison Keillor wonders, so now, and this is so Garrison Keillor, so now we have thrown some rascals out and left some rascals in power, and sent some new folks to Washington to learn the art of rascality and what, in the end, after all the hoopla, will really change. Or will the town drunk continue to run the municipal liquor store? What he says to me is that, by golly, we've still got one hell of a lot of work ahead of us, and we do. We most certainly do. I hope all of you have the great confidence that I do, and we'll talk about this when we come back, about Nancy Pelosi. As you know, if you've listened to the program for quite a while, that some months back I expressed some misgivings about Nancy Pelosi. And I've had my mind changed over the past few months about her. And I'm so glad that I took the time to follow up on a lot of this and find out some things about Nancy Pelosi that are quite admirable. And I'm very glad she's the new Speaker of the House for several reasons. And we'll talk about that after the top of the hour. We talked about the domestic terrorist, the guy that they caught sending the white powder around. Let me ask a question. If he's arrested as a domestic terrorist, and he fits the bill exactly, in July, Ann Coulter admitted that she sent the New York Times an envelope with an X scrawled through it and a suspicious powder inside. The powder was later determined to be cornstarch. And she said, and I quote, "So glad to hear that the New York Times got my letter and that your friend at the Times thinks I'm funny," she emailed a journalist after the incident. Seems to me Ann Coulter gets away with quite a bit. She also said that, what's his name that did the bombing in the Oklahoma, Timothy McVeigh. That's too bad he didn't blow up the New York Times building. She always says later that she says things like that tongue-in-cheek. How often does somebody say vicious, nasty, threatening things like that tongue-in-cheek before somebody finally takes her seriously? I also heard, and I don't know if it's true or not, that she was not allowed to vote this time. I don't know if I haven't had that verified, whether she actually was allowed to vote or not because of a possible felony of her knowingly trying to vote in the wrong precinct the last election, and she got caught. And I don't know how that's all shaking out as of yet, but don't know whether she actually got to vote this time or not. I guess we know who she voted for. And when we come back from the top of the hour, I also want to talk a little bit about Karl Rove, the magic man. Is the magic gone? Did he just have a bad day? Ooh, quite a bad day. Yeah, you know, he's been so revered in the party for so long now. And it's just going to be interesting to me to find out that how his fortunes go from now on. Are they going to just say, well, it was just an accident this time? He just didn't happen to know what was going on? I don't know. Hey, you're listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. We're going to have news coming up at the top of the hour, and we hope you'll stick with us. Got a lot to talk about. Don't forget the phone number, 866-546-5254. We'll be right back after the news. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Quality News Network. In Baghdad today, dozens of gunmen disguised as police commandos kidnapped up to 150 people at a college office, prompting a shutdown of all universities in Iraq. The head of Parliament's Education Committee called the attack a national catastrophe and urged swift action by government officials. More than 150 educators have been killed since the start of the war. Also in Iraq today, at least 20 Iraqis were killed in clashes in the western city of Ramadi. In Afghanistan, U.S. military sources say a senior al-Qaeda leader who escaped from prison last year has been captured. He was reportedly arrested last week during a raid by coalition and Afghan forces. The bipartisan Iraq study group met yesterday in Washington and heard from British Prime Minister Tony Blair by video conference this morning. The group could issue its recommendations about the Iraq war sometime after Thanksgiving. In Iran today, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad announced that Tehran's nuclear fuel program is almost complete. He also said the U.S. and other nations have, quote, finally agreed to live with a nuclear Iran, and that Tehran is willing to talk to the U.S. on the condition that Washington improve its attitude. However, after a meeting with visiting Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert, President Bush reiterated that the U.S. position on talks with Iran has not changed and that the only way forward is for Tehran to suspend its enrichment activities. The U.S. and European powers are still working toward an agreement on a U.N. draft resolution that would impose sanctions on Iran over its continued nuclear program. On Capitol Hill today, Democratic Senator Harry Reid was selected as House Majority Leader for the 110th Congress, and Senator Richard Durbin was voted in as the next Majority Whip. In Germany today, civil rights activists requested that prosecutors investigate outgoing Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld and other U.S. officials. They filed suit on behalf of a dozen alleged torture victims and say that Rumsfeld condoned the torture. In Washington yesterday, legislation aimed at normalizing trade relations with Vietnam failed in the House. House leaders say they'll try to pass the bill again tomorrow. In Vatican City today, a senior cardinal came out against the U.S. plan to build a wall to keep out illegal immigrants from Mexico. He called it an inhuman program. At the United Nations, officials have pledged a multi-million-dollar aid package meant to assist African forces operating in Darfur. The package includes personnel and equipment and was offered because Sudan refuses to allow a UN peacekeeping force in Darfur. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
U.S. health officials are asking Americans to get their flu shots this year, especially after Thanksgiving, when the demand usually decreases. Government officials are concerned that too many unused flu vaccines may lead some vaccine makers to drop production. The flu season generally does not end until February. The U.N. says collection of rainwater could provide a cheap, easy solution to Africa's droughts. That's the result of a pilot project in Kenya. Enough rain falls in many African nations to supply as much as 7 times the needed water. Health insurance companies have unveiled a plan that would provide coverage for all uninsured children in 3 years and for most adults within 10. However, the trade group did not give any recommendations on how the $300 billion plan would be funded. The Labor Department reports inflation at the wholesale level fell 1.6% in October. The drop was prompted in large part by falling energy prices. GE and Hitachi have announced they're merging their nuclear power businesses. That includes building new reactors and providing service for existing ones. And Sun Microsystems says it will offer Java free on the Internet as open-source software. The addition of Java is one of the most significant in years for the open-source community. Lightsweet crude is trading at $58.88 a barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. And on Wall Street this hour, the Dow Jones is up 8 points at 12,139. The NASDAQ is up 3 at 2409. And the S&P is up 1 at 1385. There's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Carla McLaren. It's 5 past the...
What your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. I have a dream.
This is the Guy James Show. The Guy James Show, America's number one Democratic talk show. You've heard from the radical right. Now, all that's left is the truth. And now here's Guy James.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back to the Guy James Show. So glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. Maya's quiet in the chat room today. Or at the Head On Radio Network. Everybody must be, I don't know, out doing their Christmas shopping or something. I'm not, what would one be doing on a, what is this, Tuesday afternoon? Yeah. Hey, we are so glad to have all of you along with us this afternoon. We hope you'll give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. You know, since we had the election last Tuesday, so much has transpired. I see we now have Harry Reid reelected as the majority leader. Well, he was the minority leader. Now he's the majority leader. And Dick Durbin is going to be the whip. I really like Dick Durbin. Heck of a guy. Heck of a guy. And we find out that Donald Rumsfeld, they're going to give it a go in Germany and try and prosecute the guy. Oh, wouldn't I feel bad about that? Wouldn't millions of people all over the world feel bad about that? My, 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 my. Donnie Rumsfeld, guilty of war crimes, they're saying. And Colonel Janet Karpinski is going to testify against him. Well, this could be interesting. Could be very interesting. If he is indeed guilty of war crimes, which in my opinion he is, then let him be prosecuted. It doesn't make any difference whether a person's someone of our own ilk, an American. It makes no difference at all. If you're guilty of that, you're guilty, period. We'll leave it to the courts to decide, but in any case, it looks like the courts are going to try and decide, and if it does, it's going to have a interesting ramifications with the relations between Germany and the United States, that's for sure. Hey, we had some interesting event take place here in Southwest Florida yesterday. Somebody looked down the beach in Naples, just down the road from here just a little bit, and found 28 Cuban folks had been dropped off by a boat. And 28 of them, they had two groups, one of 17 and one of 11. They found them walking clothes dry along the beach, and they went right up to an American and said, call the police. And the guy that they told that to said, gee, I wonder why they would be wanting me to call the police. Well, because they knew the law very well. That's why. Once they set foot on this country, if they're not criminals, they can stay. If they catch them out at sea, they send them back to Cuba. But if they actually step off and have their feet on the beach here, why, they get to stay in the United States. So they ship them all over to Miami to check them out and all that sort of thing. And they'll obviously join their friends and relatives in Miami, no doubt. So interesting. That doesn't happen every day. But it has been said that since they've stepped up surveillance over on the east coast of Florida, the Coast Guard has, that they're going to be trying it here in Southwest Florida a lot more. It's roughly twice the distance. It's between 250 and 300 miles from here to Havana, for example. Anyway, that was caused a good bit of excitement here. See, Johnny O says on the chat room, don't you remember Dick Dorgan had to apologize about what he said about Gitmo? Yes, I do remember that. If I were him, I said at the time, if I were him, I would not have apologized for that. I would not have. He spoke the truth. Spoke the truth. But, you know, those neocons. I'm sure many of you have noticed about the neocons and the Republicans having a big fight right now, and they certainly are. I really believe the far right is self-destructing right before our eyes. Not a moment too soon, in my opinion, but really it was inevitable that it would happen. Stop and think about it. We all know some folks on the right. We all know some Republicans, maybe friends, relatives, whatever. How long can decent people, I'm talking decent people, how long can decent people put up with the likes of Ann Coulter and Michelle Malkin and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity and Bill O'Reilly and Laura Ingraham and the rest of the right-wing harpies? How long can decent people put up with that? I'd really like to believe that millions of Americans got caught up in these vile people's rhetoric just temporarily. And I hope that's what it was, just a temporary situation. People who are not necessarily that interested in politics, like maybe you and I are, people who have no understanding of how dangerous propaganda can be. Millions of people heard these radical talkers and thought they were telling the truth, you know, turned in one day and started listening to them. It seemed to make sense, and so they kept on listening, not realizing that they would be sucked into a vortex of lies and deceit. I think many of their listeners are wising up, and I can't think of a better analogy than to say that they're wising up much as the people of Germany wised up when they found out the whole ugly truth about Hitler. Hitler's plans and propaganda sounded very good to a lot of the German people until that veil of secrecy was lifted and the German people could see the horror and the ugliness of what he was all about. And there were a certain number of Germans who would believe Hitler was right until the day they died, but they were in the vast minority, and I think that's how it is in this country right now. But thankfully, most of the German people came out from under the spell of the masterful propaganda machine. Lenny Riefenstahl's movies and Himmler and Goebbels, and they realized that they'd been duped. And in my opinion, I think so it is with the right-wing neocon Republicans. Sure, to the millions of average citizens, they looked really good for a while. They promised a land of milk and honey where there would be no taxes, no pesky government to deal with, the Ten Commandments tablet in the hallway of every school, and the Bible on every desk, and they promised to do away with rights for gay people. They promised to keep America pure by keeping others out. I know it sounded really good until a lot of the people seemed to wise up. And I think the election recently showed us that many people have wised up. And I really do think that last Tuesday was evidence that a lot of people have wised up. The spell's been broken, and common sense is, again, the rule of the day. It's not 100%, but we have the majority. The fantasy land Bush promised them is never going to happen. In fact, they finally realized that he never planned on it happening. The neocons merely used lies and false promises to get elected, and then they went on their merry way, robbing the American people blind and taking away their rights so the ruling class could enjoy complete freedom to do whatever the hell they wanted to the American public. Well, it's not going to happen. The brakes have been put on. It's been stopped in its tracks. And you ask, well, what do you think, these neocon villains are ever going to rise to power again in this country? If they do, you know whose fault it'll be? It'll be the fault of the Democrats for allowing it to happen. If they ever rise to power again, it'll be because the Democrats failed on their promises to the American people. And as we spoke of before the top of the hour, if the Democrats take this second chance they've been granted and run with it, if they govern honestly and openly and for the benefit of all the people, then the likes of Karl Rove and Grover Norquist and Newt Gingrich and Richard Perle and Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld and Junior Bush and hundreds of others will never again have a chance to ruin this country. So it's all up to the Democrats now. True, we need a Democratic president to help with the good governance, but if this new Congress functions properly, then it will follow that we will have a Democratic president in the next election. All of that right now is up to not necessarily who's jousting for the Democratic nomination. That's all going to be interesting, and that'll all take place in its time, which is not going to be too far from now. But it's all up to this Democratic Congress. If they can show the American people that the trust they were given in the election last week is deserved, if they can govern honestly and openly, forget this secrecy crap that's been going on for the last 6 years, if they think of the American people before they think of themselves, before they think of their chances for re-election, then we will have a Democratic president. There's no question of that. Just as Junior Bush cost the Republicans the House and the Senate this time, and make no mistake about it, in my opinion, it's exactly what happened. I told everybody, I mentioned for weeks, that no matter who was running on the Republican ticket, everybody running on the Republican ticket was unalterably married, joined at the hip with Junior Bush, and that the voters should think of that when they went in the voting booth, because it was inescapable that they were all lackeys for Junior Bush's programs. So they were married to him, and therefore, since the people repudiated Junior Bush, they also repudiated the Congress, the House, and the Senate members that they threw out. And so it will be with the Democrats. It'll be exactly that way. If they go off the deep end, spend money like drunken sailors, and do a bunch of stupid things like this last Congress did, and if they don't rectify some of the things this last Congress did, why, then it'll be easy for the Republicans to take the House and Senate back and the presidency as well. But if the Democrats do the job I think they're capable of, then we'll be in good shape. All we'll have to do is pick one of the many good candidates we will have running for president, and we also all already know that we will have several very fine candidates for the presidency. So it's up to you, Democrats, and moreover, it is up to you and I. It's up to you and I to keep up the same pressure. You see, now's not the time to let down. Now's not the time to have a big party, get drunk, and have a hangover for a few months. Now is the time for us to let the Democrats know that we elected the people that we put in power. Now's the time for us to let them know and keep letting them know, week in, week out, that we expect the best from them. We expect them to listen to us. We expect them to know that they are working for us. We are not working for them. And so, yes, it's up to the Democratic politicians to do their jobs and do it right. But moreover, it's up to you and I to not let up. All this political excitability we've had over the past few months, we can't let it wane. And I understand that now that the election's over with, there's a little cooling off period. Everybody's relaxing a little bit and so forth. But now's not the time to completely take your eye off the ball. And I know most of my listeners know that. I know most of you will not let up. But just be on your guard. Let's keep close track of them. Just because we elected Democrats doesn't mean they're going to do everything right and go off and, do it their own way and be right all the time. We've got to let them know we're right there watching. If we do that, we'll be fine. Because we the people have good intentions. And if we make sure that that's translated into the proper kind of votes in the Congress, things will be fine. I'm sure of that. 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. Love to have you give us a call here on the program today. Kind of a quiet day. And it's interesting to me to see what's happened also here in the past 7 days now. I think, and a lot of people are going to disagree with me, and the people that I'm about to talk about are going to hate what I have to say, but I don't care. I think we've knocked down one of the big stumbling blocks to a better America. There's a little question in my mind. There's another obstacle in the way, and it's absolutely imperative that we squash it like a bug while it's still reeling from its most recent scandal and its humiliation resulting from its recent efforts to sway an election in its favor. And what am I speaking about here? Well, it's probably obvious to all of you. I'm speaking about the radical evangelical so-called Christian movement in this country. I am not speaking about all Christians. I am of the Christian faith myself. This movement isn't what it seems nor what it claims to be. It never was. And to all involved in trying to advance the movement, let me say this. Let's stop the charade. You and those like you are not Christians, nor is what you do even religion. It's a radical right-wing political movement used only to make money for you and justify your schizophrenic intolerance, your dumbass ignorance, and your blatant desires for a theocratic government. When are all the followers of these people, you know, when are they going to figure out that they're nothing but a bunch of self-serving, power-hungry bunch of charlatans who are interested only in advancing their own narrow-minded agendas? Really, when are the followers of the likes of Pat Robertson and Jerry Falwell and James Dobson and Jimmy Swaggart and Ted Haggard and Jim Baker and a truckload of others, when are they ever going to figure out these guys are nothing more than a bunch of power-hungry freaks who want you to support their habits, whether they're using meth, using whores, buying diamond mines, or getting messages from gay prostitutes? Probably a few well-intentioned ones in there. But of those TV evangelists, I can't really tell you any who are. The radical right-wing evangelicals are whining because we see through their sleight-of-hand tricks and because, once again, we point out that one of their leaders is a fraud. And actually, I think all those types that I just mentioned are frauds. You know, when one of our guys falls, which happens on occasion, their people are all over it. They beat the drums. They shout to the rafters. It sounded like the apocalypse itself when Bill Clinton had a consensual affair with an adult. But when the right-wing Republican representatives tries to touch boys, or the right-wing radical preachers are smoking meth or whatever you do with meth, their response is almost always, well, what about Clinton? Thing is, we ain't talking about Clinton right now, if you're pardon my vernacular. We're talking about this. You don't get to take the spotlight away from your meth head, Jesus freak, fire and brimstone, hypocritical preacher just because Clinton offended you a decade ago or because Gary Hart bagged a bikini model way back in, what, the early 80s? And why are we painting with a broad brush? Because, as it turns out, much of the Republican leadership was in the loop. Turns out Hastert, who we already knew was a scumbag, also knew about the pages, as did half the Republican leadership. The Republicans have got some serious credibility issues, and the public finally figured that out. That's why they're going out of power now. But now they're trying to spin the reasons that they got their asses handed to them in the election. They lost because the nation figured out that they're nothing more than a bunch of people who spin the hell out of the truth. The Republicans preach that they're the party of personal responsibility. So as they like to point out time and time and time again, it's time for them to take some of that responsibility. Love to see that happen. 866-546-5254. We'll be back in a moment or two.
Let's head on with Bob Kincaid. This is Head On with Bob Kincaid.
The only hope that George Bush had after he raped the Treasury, after he ripped us off, the only hope he had for balancing out the amount of the bad paper that he had to go and hang in China was to take control of the means by which China would receive oil. Iraq is one of the faucets. The other faucet is Iran. If he can control those two things, he can continue to hang bad paper on China, and on the other end, act as the dealer outside the schoolyard to China's little junkie. Does this make sense?
It makes perfect sense, and I haven't heard it said in that concise a manner. Nobody has made the loop so small that everybody can realize.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. Eastern, only at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and RadioPower.org.
Don't know who marked fully blue.
We had no clue, but Tom Reynolds says then he knew. And don't it make my red state blue? Mike DeWine will soon be gone. Rove will cry all that long. Kiss the house. Negotiations with North Korea. You can't seem to hold back, Dad. Won't be saved by hanging Chad. Bush is really.
Winning, and we will win.
Back off, back off. This is complicated stuff.
Take the word of a madman.
We're winning, and we will win.
Don't it make my red state? Don't it make my red state? Don't it make my red state blue?
Hey, glad to have you back with us here on the Guy James Show. Got about a half hour left, slightly over a half hour left in the program today. Give us a call, 866-546-5254, 866-546-5254. Going to have a great guest on the program tomorrow that has a is going to talk about a subject in an article he did recently. John Nichols from The Nation's Magazine is going to be with us to talk about his recent article about a subject near and dear to most of your hearts. Going to talk about impeachment. Yes, impeachment. Making the case for it. Should be interesting. Should we or shouldn't we? God knows we've got plenty of reason. God knows there's plenty of legal reasons to do it. The question is, I guess... Well, no. I don't think the question is politically whether it should be done or not. Is it right or is it wrong? Forget the politics of it. Has the man committed crimes against America? Should he be impeached? Take Cheney with him? Ooh. Yeah, I say if we impeach anybody, let's get rid of Cheney first and then, and then we'll be safe. There's nobody in the world they could put in that position to be worse than Dick Cheney. So he's going to be with us tomorrow. Well, let me see where, what time here. About the bottom of the first hour tomorrow. What do you think about our new Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi? I've been thinking a lot about it, and I, in the past, have criticized Nancy Pelosi for not getting in the face of the Republicans enough during the first term, and I understand, during the past 6 years, I do understand that it's been a difficult, in farmer's term, a tough field to plow, what with Tom DeLay being there and ruling with an iron hand and all. But I hope everybody's ready for this. We're going to have a Speaker of the House who's going to run the place with an iron hand. I don't think there's any question about that right now. There isn't going to be any de facto leader. There'll be no Tom DeLay types running the show. They're just going to be Nancy Pelosi, and what she says goes. And if she doesn't get the cooperation she wants from the majority leader, whip, or other leadership positions, she'll just have them replaced, period. I don't think there's any doubt about that. This woman is a no-nonsense leader, and she's going to kick ass on both sides of the aisle. I'm absolutely convinced of it.
And it's about time we had somebody, a speaker, who had the guts to run the place where it ought to be run. Let's face it, we haven't had a genuine Speaker of the House for 8 years. Denny Hastert's the weakest, probably most unimportant speaker of our generation. All he's ever been is a hand puppet for Bush or whoever the hell's running the White House. He was chosen because they knew he would lick their boots and say yes, sir, to anything and everything the White House wanted. Anything they wanted done. As clearly evidenced by some of the legislation passed during his tenure. You know, I really think if the White House had asked for legislation allowing crucifixions of Bush's enemies on the Capitol ground, Hastert would have gone along with it. He hasn't put his foot down even once. Well, yes, once. All that time he was all riled up about the FBI being able to search congressional offices, as in the case of Democrat William Jefferson, who ought to be out of the House of Representatives. Out with him. But in my opinion, Hastert was dead wrong on that one. Or, more likely, he objected because he was afraid of having the FBI open a real Pandora's box in the joint. And I bet you the shredders, paper shredders, wouldn't be able to get enough of them or run them fast enough if the FBI said they were going to come in and have a raid on the entire place. Oh, would that get people going? Take the hard drives and the files of all the congressmen and start going through them with a fine-tooth comb? Oh, geez, would that be... that'd set some hearts aflutter, wouldn't it? So, yes, I think Nancy Pelosi is going to be a tough, no-nonsense speaker. I think she's going to be willing and able to play hardball with anybody, most especially the White House. But I also think the woman knows what the term compromise means, and I think she'll be fair. I don't think she's going in there with a sense of vindictiveness. I don't think. I wouldn't blame her if she did. For what the Republicans have done to the Democrats these past 6 years has been undeniably the worst. Just the worst. Told them they didn't give a damn what they thought about anything and acted like it and just kept them quiet for 6 years. There was no compromising done. There were no talks across the aisle. Nothing. And as I said before, I've had misgivings about Nancy Pelosi in the past. But during these last couple of months, my confidence in her's grown. And I like what I've been seeing. Now, if I could feel the same way about Harry Reid, I'd be a real, real happy right now. I really would. Harry, show me something, will you? Please? But we see some of the things Nancy Pelosi wants to do. And actually, I had to go to... the Canadian broadcasting system to get this piece about what Nancy Pelosi wants to do with some tough new rules. Here's some of the rules Nancy Pelosi wants. No House member may accept any gift of value from lobbyists or any firm associated that hires people, political people. No free travel. Which means an end to the corporate jet line every Friday at Reagan National Airport. God, I hate saying Reagan National Airport. Why did I say that? You know, no free tickets to the Redskin games. No free meals of any value, even at McDonald's. No front row seats at entertainment venues. You know, House members are no longer to be able to slip in special interest projects on unrelated legislation. Not going to be allowed to throw some of those things in on a bill once negotiations between the Senate and the House are complete, like they have done willy-nilly during these last 6 years. Further, all bills will be made available to the public a full 24 hours before the final vote. Presumably, this will give watchdog groups a chance to flag any skullduggery. God knows there's been plenty of this under the Republican administration. Lobbyists are no longer going to be able to use the House gym. So you'd be surprised how many deals are negotiated in a sauna. Lobbyists will no longer be allowed into the House floor or to use the cloakroom. preventing last-minute twisting. You know, that's one thing I think a lot of Americans just aren't aware of. I think most Americans have no idea that lobbyists just have the run of the place. Did you know that? You can't take your kids and walk through the rotunda of the Capitol building nowadays without a special pass, a senior congressman or somebody to get a special pass to go through there. The public no longer gets to go through there. But a guy working for Dow Chemical or Morton Thiokol or any of the big companies, they can go any place they damn please in our nation's capital, in the people's house. It's not right. It's just not right. They should not be allowed in the building. No. If they want to go to the Senate office building, House of Representatives office building, then go over there. The Hart building, the Rayburn building, stay out of the Capitol building. What else did Nancy want? No member or staffer will be able to negotiate for employment in the public sector without sending such contracts to the House Ethics Committee and within 3 days of such contact being made. Finally, all of this will be audited and investigated by the new Office of Public Integrity, and that office representative answers only to the U.S. Attorney's Office. I say this would be a great thing. Absolutely be a great thing to do all these things. And man, oh man, oh man, I bet you if they had a meeting of all the House members and Nancy tells them all these new rules she wants, of course, they'd be doing this behind closed doors so the public couldn't see their reaction to this. They'd be jumping up and down and screaming and say, hey, what the hell do you think we ran for office for in the first place if we couldn't get all these perks? If the truth be told. So, congratulations, Nancy Pelosi. We're counting on you to do a great job. She says she's going to get going right out of the gate. I hope she does. She's got that first 100-hour plan. She's got a lot of things to do. She got a lot of wrongs to make right again. But I think she's the gal to do it. I really do. What happened to Karl Rove? Hey, what happened to you? 866-546-5254. 866-546-5254. What happened to Karl Rove's magic this time? Was he really the architect? Is Karl really a political genius? I think not. Yours truly sit here and predicted the results of this last election pretty doggone accurately. Karl Rove was as far off as you could be. And yet he swore he had it right up to the very last moment, I'm told. Right up until the evening when they started counting the votes, he still thought he had it right. And then he sends Bush out to speak in Missouri. Talent was ahead in that race until Bush got there. He sent him out to speak in Montana. Up until the time he got there, Burns had been closing fast. Didn't turn out so well. Turned out that Bush was the kiss of death. So, I don't know. You can, I think you can count Missouri and Montana as being, it turned to crap when Bush went there for the Republicans. And I couldn't be happier about it. Let's go with the phones. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show.
It's Dave, Guy.
Hi, Dave.
Northern Cal here. You're calling it right. I think an awful lot of congressmen, if this goes through, would take the whole reason that they're in office away from them.
Bunch of them, yeah.
Yeah, they're there for the big bucks. But the main thing that I'm not hearing and that just makes me break out in a rash is these congressmen seem unaware of how much the Republicans are into rigging elections.
You're never going to hear a thing about it in the halls of Congress. Never.
I wonder, why not?
They're not the slightest bit interested in it, Dave. They're politicians. Neither side. I can tell you for a fact that neither side, and I'm just being honest with you here, Dave. I've talked to enough of them to know by now that neither side gives a tinker's damn about that issue. Not whatsoever. You will never see it discussed on the Senate and House floor in any meaningful way whatsoever. That's my prediction. That's not my wish. That's my prediction.
Well, you know, Russ Holt authored a bill, and it has had more co-signers than any other. Now, they quietly did it. They didn't speak out. Neither did I. I didn't even hear Russ Holt speaking up. But nothing can be more important to this country, because if we still have these damn machines 2 years from now, they will never make the same mistake again.
Well, you can count on it. We're going to have them 2 years from now. I'm thoroughly convinced of it. I just in the last couple of months have become convinced that I don't think we stand a chance of ever getting rid of them. I wish we could. I wish we wave a magic wand right now and get rid of every one of them in the Pacific Ocean. But they don't care about that issue. I promise you, they really don't care about that issue. I can't properly explain why, but that's the last thing on their minds. Evidently, they think either they don't think they're unfair, or they don't want to open a Pandora's box that nobody wants to look into.
You have had guests on your program that explained how those machines were designed to cheat.
Oh, yeah.
And to leave no record of how they cheated.
Sure.
You even pointed out that Lieberman's opponent, both last elections, got exactly the same 476,000.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
The machines were programmed to do, and they delivered what they were programmed to do, and the only thing that saved this country was that a whole hell of a lot of people turned out that they didn't expect would, and I think there was a couple of other little factors. Bush was stepping on his dong real hard the last few days before it, and maybe even turned a few votes away himself. But I think if you would do one thing big for save this country is every time you have a guest that has any influence in the Congress, if you'd put this on them, get rid of these damn voting machines. You know,
well,
honest elections.
I just wish it could be so. I'll tell you, Dave, I won't name any names because I don't know why I won't name any names. I'll have to think about it. But seriously, I've talked to some pretty important Democrats that just look at you down their nose when you talk about that issue. They just look at you like, oh, take off your tinfoil hat and go home. I mean, that's just exactly the way they treat you.
I think the DLC tells them that. Don't look like a conspiracy theorist. By chance, have you spoken with Clint Curtis since the election?
No, I have not.
Be nice to know what his insights on this is. I don't know. Do you know, did he concede?
I don't know if he officially conceded, but he has advanced the idea that there may have been some anomalies in the vote in his area. He took Volusia County very easily, and the other counties he was way behind, but Volusia County he carried it quite nicely.
He was one of the people that the cons did not want in Congress.
Well, he's one of the people that some of the Democrats didn't want in Congress. They didn't help him at all. Let's make some people mad here. We talk about it. I'm not that thrilled about what Rahm Emanuel did at all. I think people ought to understand, if I've got it figured right, Rahm Emanuel went out and handpicked 22 candidates, and 13 of them got beat. So his ideas on how to run an election aren't exactly that great to me. And, you know, he was deciding where a lot of the funding was gone. And here you had Clint Curtis and some others sitting there high and dry and never got a dime.
I know you're a one busy man, but if you have a few minutes and you still have a contact number for Clint,
I got it right in front of my face here.
Maybe you would say, can you give us your input on this thing?
Well, we'll do that. We'll do that in the next couple of days. I'll get a hold of him, see if he's free to come on.
Oh, that would be great. Thank you for everything you do, Guy. But this is such a big one, and I can't imagine why the Democratic congressmen don't see that as what's going to be the demise of this country.
Well, Dave, there's two issues that I have gone to Washington, as my listeners know, several times. Now it's getting to be what I should call many times. There's two issues that I've always brought up to them, and it's always a small group of maybe 5, 6, 8, 10 of us civilians talking to a group of them. One, as you know, an issue near and dear to my heart is how we get our brains beat out in talk radio, and we've gotten no help from them whatsoever.
Yeah.
No help from the Democratic Party at all. In fact, we've had the DLC actually work against us, in my opinion. And the other is the voting machines. And both of those issues, they just look at us like, so what? I mean, that's really what I get from them. I don't know. It's rather disconcerting. It really is. But I will get Kurt on. Clint on. I will. I don't know whether he's off vacationing someplace now or what after.
Well, you know, he wasn't about to concede if he thought this was going to be rigged on him, and he knew the machines were capable of it. He was asked to design them. So
yeah, and he worked really hard in this election. And we have another guy over here in our coast, Robert Neal, who ran against Connie Mack. You know, both of those guys were going up against people that had unlimited funds. And I think Clint Curtis had a total of $33,000. And I think Robert Neal here had about $25,000. And the Democratic Party didn't do a damn thing for either one of them. They were good candidates, too. So
I've always had a third issue for which every Democrat and every Republican runs and sticks their head in the sand, and that is so many unanswered questions about 9/11, but they don't want to be ever heard speaking of that day.
Nope, never going to happen.
You do a wonderful thing for this country. Get yourself on every station in every town.
Yeah, well, we'd like that. Hey, Dave, thanks. Good to hear from you. I promise I'll try my best to get Clint on.
Yeah, it'd be wonderful to hear his insights on this.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, those are a couple of issues that you just can't get people in Congress to talk about. I'm looking through my Rolodex right now. I think I got Clint's number here someplace close by. Maybe I got it over in my other office. I'm not sure. I don't know why. I can't explain that, and I'd love to be able to explain it. Every time I come home from one of those meetings, you know, I think, well, why can't we get something done about this? But they're just not about to. I don't know why. I hate sitting here and saying it like that I can't do anything about it, but they don't want to listen. I don't know why. Wish I knew. Johnny O says on the chat room we have Uncle Lou fighting for proper voting machines. Uncle Lou who, Johnny? What am I missing there? Lou. I'm not sure. Sometimes I'm a little dense. But then, yeah, that's what happened. You know, here in Florida, we had a couple of big upsets. I don't know if the one in Mahoney over Negron, you know, Foley's replacement, Negron, was a write-in. So that was closer than it should have been. And we got rid of Shaw here. Klein beat Shaw. We were really happy about that. But I really was disgusted over the fact that Feeney had an easy time of it over Clint Curtis. Clint carried his own county so well, and Clint has done so much for this voting machine issue and just didn't get the backing that he should have. I'd like to know what goes on in those. Oh, Lou Dobbs, Johnny O says, fighting for proper voting machines. Yeah, that's true. Lou's on that issue. He's a two-issue man, the immigrations and the voting machines, and we thank him for that. 866-546-5254, if you'd like to give us a call. 866-546-5254. This Mel Martinez becoming the new RNC chairman, you could have knocked me over with a feather on that one. He's one of the last people in the world I would have thought they would have picked for a new RNC chairman. And then I got to thinking, well, there is one reason, of course, and they're going to go after the Hispanic vote with Mel Martinez. But what does he think? These folks are stupid. They are not. They're quite politically astute, especially considering the fact that, what was it, 88% of their votes or something like that, something along that order, went for the Democrats this time. So the Republicans saw that and said, hey, let's put somebody in there as RNC chairman and we'll sway some of those votes. Doesn't matter. And here's the Republican thinking. Doesn't matter what he's for, what he's been for, what he's done, what, you know, doesn't matter that. We'll just tell everybody that, you know, he's one of theirs. And that'll get us those votes that we need so desperately. I think it's great. I am extremely pleased that Mel Martinez is the new RNC chairman. Oh, yes. I would like to know how they justify a United States senator. And I don't know how many times this has happened in the past, but I think it's wrong. I think for an office holder to hold that position concurrently is wrong. You're getting paid by the public. You're on the public dole. You should not be doing the bidding of the RNC on our time. And you tell me that they never do any of it on our time. Yeah, right. Like I said, thinking back over history, maybe it's been done on our side too, but it's wrong. It's just absolutely wrong. But I am thankful. I'm grateful to him for putting Mel Martinez in as the RNC chairman. Fabulous idea. The guy's an intellectual midget. We've got that going for us too. You remember his vote on his Schiavo memo. I would have thought he would have gone and crawled in a hole after being found out about that. His office authored a memo touting the political advantages to intervening in the Terry Schiavo tragedy. And the memo said, this is a great political issue because Senator Nelson of Florida has already refused to become a co-sponsor, and this is a tough issue for Democrats. And, of course, he blamed it on somebody else. Anything that ever happens in his office that goes astray, he blames on somebody else. He's left minority and low-income home buyers behind. I'm just looking down through his record here. He opposed the increasing the minimum wage. He's against the stem cell research. He's just against a whole lot of things. He doesn't want to bring our troops home. In other words, he's one of those neocon Republicans that still marching to the beat of the Tom DeLay drum and the Bill Fisk drum and all that. And you know what? Loser! Loser! That's not going to win for you anymore, folks. Not anymore. The American public has come to their senses. Perhaps not enough of them yet. But if this new Democratic Congress acts in a responsible manner and does all that they need to do to bring this government around to right the ship once again, you're dead in the water, boys. I want you to know that right now. If Nancy Pelosi gets the things done she says she wants to get done, the Republican neocon ship is sinking. And it won't be back. The only way it'll ever come back is if the Democrats let it come back, if they go in there and screw things up. We promised to go in and do something about this war. Let's do it. I understand that yesterday I was absolutely shocked when I read this. General John Abizade, head of the U.S. Central Command in the Mideast, told al-Maliki that he wants a firm timetable as to when Iraqi forces can assume military responsibilities from American forces. They've got this problem with the Shiite militia groups that Maliki hasn't been able to do a damn thing about, and I'm sure by now all of you have heard that they just walked in today with about 30 cars and pickup trucks, whatnot, in brand new militia uniforms and kidnapped 150 people who run the college and universities, thus shutting down all the higher education in that country today. Last I heard, they'd let 20 of them go. Is this going to end up being another big slaughter? But let's face it, Maliki has no control over that country. He's got a cabinet that he doesn't want. He's blaming them. They're blaming him. They've had three elections now, and they've got a constitution that isn't worth the paper it's written on. It's not being enforced. They've got problems, and they've shown no indication whatsoever that they're going to do anything about it. We've been saying this all along, that when they stand up, we'll stand down. Well, you know, they've gone the opposite way. Not only have they not stood up, they've run away. And we've got American soldiers there taking bullets to get them their country for them, and they refuse. They've shown no leadership. The leadership that we've pretty much handpicked for them has been a total failure. Bush and all of his people made such hay off these elections and the purple fingers, and what did it end up meaning? Nothing. They say if we leave, there'll be chaos. We're there, and there's chaos. So what's the answer? We got time for, well, do we have time for one quick call? Let's see. Hi, you're on the Guy James Show. We got just a minute and a half or so.
Hi, Guy.
Hi.
Phil up in Daytona Beach.
Hi, Phil. We got about a minute.
Okay. Well, you know, I don't blame the Iraqis. Hey, they really didn't ask us to be there. You know, they didn't ask for Bush's freedom. We invaded Iraq according to the Project for the New American Century's plan for empire. And they know that. They know that more than the American people know it. And you can't blame them. Our kids, we got to get them the hell out of there.
Yeah.
We really got to work on Pelosi and the Democrats and get those kids the heck out of there. Support our troops. Get them home.
That's right. I agree wholeheartedly. Thanks for your call.
You betcha, Guy. Great show. Thank you.
I agree. We've got to get them out of there. And the Democrats have promised to do so. So let's make sure that they do. Let's make sure that they do. That's our number one mission, I think, before anything else, or while we're doing everything else, to solve that problem that Bush has caused. That's how it goes. The Republicans make the problems and the Democrats solve them. One administration after another, that's been the story. Well, hey, I'm awfully glad you decided to be with us here on the program today. Here on the Guy James Show and the Head On Radio Network. We haven't solved the world problems, but now we understand them a little better, don't we? Of course. And it's going to be interesting to find out overnight what happened to those 150 people. I haven't seen the news up to the minute here. Maybe something's happened by now. We hope and pray that situation will be worked out. That we've got a big job ahead. It's up to you and I to make sure it gets done. Hey, thanks for listening to the Guy James Show here on the Head On Radio Network. And never forget, you've heard from the radical right. Now all that's left is the truth. Have a good one, gang. I'll see you tomorrow.